Ladies. Vaira Anubandha, bond of hatred. Tivrena, consisting of acute. Dhyanena, by meditation. Hare Krishna. Achyuta Satmatam, to the effulgence of the infallible Lord. Nitao, attained. Puna, again. Hare, of Hari. Parashvam, the proximity. Jagmatu, they reached. Vishnu Parashado, the gatekeeper associates of Vishnu. Translation. These two associates of Lord Vishnu, Jai and Vijay, maintained a feeling of enmity for a very long time. Because of always thinking of Krishna in this way, they regained the shelter of the Lord, having returned home back to Godhead. Kindly repeat. These two associates of Lord Vishnu, Jai and Vijay, maintained a feeling of enmity for a very long time. Because of always thinking of Krishna in this way, they regained the shelter of the Lord, having returned home back to Godhead. Purport. Whatever their position, certainly Jai and Vijay always thought of Krishna. Therefore, at the end of the Moksha Lila, these two associates of the Lord returned to Krishna. There is no difference between Krishna's body and Narayan's body. Therefore, although they visibly entered the body of Krishna, they actually re-entered Vaikuntha Loka as the doorkeepers of Lord Vishnu. Through Lord Krishna's body, they returned to Vaikuntha, although they seemed to have attained Sayuja Mukti in Krishna's body. I've been requested to read the next verse. Shri Yudhishthira Vacha, Vidvesho Daite Putre, Katama Sin Mahatmani, Bruhime Bhagavan Yena, Praladasya Achutatmata. Maharaj Yudhishthira inquired, O my lord, Narad Muni, why was there such enmity between Hiranyakashipu and his beloved son Prahlad Maharaj? How did Prahlad Maharaj become such a great devotee of Lord Krishna? Kindly explain this to me. And Prabhupada comments, all the devotees of Lord Krishna are called Achyutatma because they follow in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj. Achyuta refers to the infallible Lord Vishnu, whose heart is always infallible. Because the devotees are attached to the infallible, they are called Achyutatma. Om Agyana Timarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Jina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Badaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashtajari Shatrani. Taking the dust of the lotus feet of all the Vaishnavas gathered here, I shall try to say something. Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyascha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai and Vijay are the last gatekeepers at the seventh gate of Vaikuntha. In his Sri Vaikuntha Gadya, Ramanujacharya, he gives the names of each set of gatekeepers. There's two gatekeepers for each gate. If you go to Sri Rangam, there's the Sanctum Sanctorum, surrounded by the temple, a wall, and ultimately seven walls. And this makes a Vaishnav city. And then in the time of Ramanujacharya, there was some 25,000 Vaishnavas living there. Vaishnavas are very attracted to living in a place of the Lord. As you may have noticed, if you look around, Vaishnavas are very attracted to come to those holy places which are sacred to the Lord. I first came here in 1977. They were just finishing what we then called the Long Building. The temple as it was behind us here, and there was Prabhupada's Bhajan Kutir. It's a rice field. A rice field. But not just any rice field. It was a rice field that was dedicated to the Supreme Personality of Godhead by His most trusted, loving servant, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And now, it is so famous that I step out of the airplane at Calcutta Airport, and what do I see when I come in? I see a picture of the Temple of the Vedic Planetarium. I see a large blow-up picture of the Gurukula. I see a large blow-up picture of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates. Fame comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and one fixes one's attention on Him. Anything and anyone becomes famous. The devotees of the Lord become famous. The place where the devotees like to gather, that also becomes famous. How we deal with that fame is something else. How we deal with that wealth that comes in response to that fame, that is something else. But the path for those who have set their consciousness on that transcendent goal of Godhead is a path of success. There is no lack of success for the Vaishnava. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pashanti Surayo Diviva Chakshura Ajitam Tad Vipraso Vipanyavo Jagravangsa Samindade Vishnu Yat Paramam Padam. A Vaishnava is one who has fixed his mind on the service of the Lord and has fixed his mind on that supreme abode of the Lord. The devotee of the Lord, his task is to advertise that abode of the Lord and to say, my dear friends, as Prahlad Maharaj did with his friends, my dear friends, I am going to that place. Please come with me. And this is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. My dear friends, we are going there. Please come with us. Sing with us, dance with us, eat with us, and if you do it just once, then I guarantee that you'll be doing this for the rest of your life. And what a wonderful thing. But one small ingredient, one very small ingredient, you have to be convinced that happiness lies there and not here. And that may take some time. May take some time. We have to be very, very convinced that we are bound up tightly and our freedom has become restricted in order to want to be free. Everybody wants to be free. People sing about freedom, they write about freedom. They engage in politics in order to be free. They engage in social work in order to feel freedom, to free people from ignorance, to free people from hunger. But we have to know what it means to be bound up. I don't know if any of you in the course of executing your Krishna consciousness or teaching others about Krishna have had your freedom curtailed. Have you? You know what it's like? To be taken and to have your freedom curtailed, to be locked up. Then you'll get a glimpse of the material entanglement, the position of being bound up. The person who made me free, the person who set me free, who said, I'm going back to Vaikuntha, come with me and I will introduce you to His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. His name I first learned in the middle of a field in the pouring rain. He was an Irishman known as Tribhuvanath. Put your hands in the air, Tribhuvanath Ki Jai. And he very mercifully intervened. He very mercifully intervened in my life. I was 17. I didn't know which way to turn. I was experimenting with different religious persuasions and spiritual groups. And he came to me and he said, please come. Come with us. Many years later, he was doing the same thing in the Middle East. He was in Lebanon, in Beirut. And he was arrested by an organization that is dedicated to freedom. So much dedicated to freedom that if you do not share their vision of freedom, they will lock you up. So Tribhuvanath was arrested by the Palestinian Liberation Organization. Okay? So in exchange for being arrested by them, he was placed in a cell, a prison cell, for months. This was no ordinary prison cell, my friends. This was a cell whose ceiling was only 3 feet high. So for 1 month, my dear friend Tribhuvanath did not stand up. Later on, he told me, he said, this really gave me an understanding of what it means to be in material bondage. Because we think, you know, I'm 6 foot tall, I have a United Kingdom passport, that's freedom. I can go anywhere I like, I can say what I like, I can vote for whom I like, I'm free. Not so. Actually, you're trapped in a piece of flesh. It may be British flesh, or German flesh, or Bengali flesh. If you see a piece of flesh at the side of the road, you want to get as far away as possible. You don't want to be squashed up, packed tight inside. This is the condition of the soul. But we have to be convinced that we're in bondage. Many years ago, when I was young and single, and Prabhupada was talking about the threefold miseries, I just took the threefold miseries, adhyatmik, adhidaivik, adhibhautik, and I just ticked them off as a philosophical abstract, just a philosophical abstract, along with the five members of the Panchatattva, the three modes of material nature, the four varnas and ashrams, the six Goswamis, the seven rishis, the eight gopis, the nine yogendras, and the 10, take your pick, the 10 avatars, right? I was just receiving lists, and it didn't really make a great deal of sense to me. I think as you go through life, there's one thing that you become absolutely convinced of, is the infinite potential of the human body to suffer. Right? Any gentleman over the age of 40, put your hands up and give me a wave. I'm not going to ask the ladies, because we never ask ladies how old they are, but gentlemen, if you're over 40, you know what I'm talking about. Gentlemen over 50, you can... William Shakespeare said, after 50, it's all downhill. Or something like that. He said, you lose your senses. You lose your nose, your sense of hearing, you lose your teeth. You lose everything. This is the condition. So it's easier, I feel, to understand your frail condition and your vulnerable condition the older you get. And of course, when I was 17, old age had no meaning, disease had no meaning, and certainly death had no meaning. And now it does have meaning. Yamaraj has come knocking on my door once, coming knocking on my door twice. And the third knock, my dear Lord Yamaraj, let it not be today. Such a nice day, the sun is shining, but we never know. Yamaraj will come whatever the weather. Not only are we bound up, but we are in a repeat cycle. We are in a repeat cycle, cycle of reincarnation. And this is a very dire situation for us to be in. It has happened many, many thousands of times. Even that I wasn't convinced of, but Prabhupada convinced me. Prabhupada came to Bhaktivedanta Manna when I was 20, you know, 3 years in Krishna consciousness, but I still wasn't convinced of reincarnation. Except when Prabhupada directly told me, at the end of a class, he looked at all these young men from England and Germany, I believe. He said, so you have had many lives in the past, many thousands of lives you've had. And in the future, you can have many, many more thousands of lives if you wish. But just this one life, just this one short life, you give this life to Krishna and you won't regret it. And it's one of those moments that you always remember. I remember where I was and what he's saying. I thought, oh, it's a very short life. Yes, it's nothing. Well, it's nothing when you're 20. You give it to Krishna. But he said that, and I remember receiving great conviction from that. But that conviction has to come either from Shastra or from the words of the great devotee or by hard experience. You have to become convinced that this is not the place where I live. This is not my home. There is another place for me. Prabhupada told about the football that was being kicked. He said, the football is being kicked by one boy, and then it is landing, and then he's kicking, another boy is kicking, and it is going through the sky like this. Kick, kick, kick. And when it is here, the football is thinking, I am flying. I am free. He said, but actually, in a few moments, he will be kicked again. So we are kicked at every moment, and in between we think, I'm free. You know these things, and I'm hesitating to say anything to you because you've all traveled thousands of miles to be here. This is a Bhagavatam class, and you already know these basic things, but without the basics, sometimes we can even forget the basics. Material happiness is followed by material distress. That's the sequence of events. No matter what we have, we lose it. No matter what we achieve, someone will come along and steal it. I have some prestige, I have a position, someone will come along and take it. I have some wealth, somebody will spend it. And at the end of life, we are left with nothing. We're left with whatever we came in with. And it's because of this imminent sense of loss that we aspire for something. But we aspire for something greater, something more free, something more established, something more permanent. And we do it in two ways. We either try to establish through the path of karmakanda a happiness that is the most permanent that we can possibly imagine. In swarga, the higher dimensions of happiness. Or, if we're very intelligent, we try through the path of jnanakanda to be free, to be liberated from any material desire and any material enjoyment. Because let us not forget that any material activity results in a reaction. The old example is of in the springtime in India, there's a little musk deer. The musk deer gives very beautiful perfume. Nice musk. But it is secreted from a little gland on its inside. But he's on all fours, and he sniffs the air, and he can smell this beautiful perfume. He doesn't know where it's from, so he trots over to the other side of the hill in search of this alluring perfume. Meanwhile, the little musk deer on the other side, he's also smelling, and he's coming over this side. And a yogi is watching, and he's seeing all these musk deer running. They're running to catch this beautiful smell, not knowing that it comes from deep within. He says, this is material civilization. And as we heard the other day, everybody is running to go somewhere else, to have some other experience, not knowing that the real pleasure lies within. And what we're actually searching for is final liberation. Final liberation from birth and death. Of course, Srila Rupa Goswami says, Anya abhilashita shunyam jnana karmadi anavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. That you can do bhakti in order to get some fruitive activity. Yes, you can serve Krishna in order to get something in this life. You can serve Krishna to get liberation But the highest form, the Bhakti Ruttama, is without any jnana and karma at all. There are many people who try for nothing at all in particular, other than eating, mating, sleeping, and defending. If they get by with food every day, and they can raise their children, and they can stay relatively free from political violence, or from revolution, or from the pains of drought and famine, then they consider their life successful. Then there are those who really are civilized, who want to attain the higher planets, more civilized, want to attain liberation, and very, very few. Vasudeva Sarvamiti Sa Mahatma Sudurbaha. Very, very few aspire for the lotus feet of Govinda. As the Padma Purana says, Ashitim Chaturash Chaiva, 8,400,000 species of life. We pass through all of them on our way to the human form of life, such a rare birth. Laksham Stan Jiva Jati Shu, Manusham Brahmadvi Purushai Prapyam, Manusham Janma Pariyayat, Manusham Janma, very, very rare to get a human form. Tadapiya Palatam Jata, Te Shamatma Bimaninam, Varakana Manashritya, Govinda Charanadvayam, but very few take shelter of Govinda. But when we're ready to take shelter of Govinda, what happens? Well, this is a very beautiful question posed by Uddhava to Krishna. Now, when Arjuna poses the same question, Krishna doesn't have a great deal of time. He just says, Tadvidi Pranipatena, you know the rest, 434. This is very brief, okay? You wouldn't really squeeze much for the ISKCON disciple course out of that one verse. But in the 11th canto, the Uddhava Gita, the Lord explains more. He says, first of all, a man's mind can be his guru. This is the very beginning. One uses one's intellect to see, on the one hand, there is suffering, on the one hand, there is happiness. He says, then, in this world, everything and everyone can become a guru. And Krishna himself tells the story of a young man who had 24 gurus. And it seemed as if, to use New Age jargon, the universe was telling him. Because as yet, it's unspecified, you see. It's not Krishna. There's no person involved. It's just the tree, the lake, the river, a snatch of conversation over here, a magazine article over here, a movie over there. And how many of us who came to Krishna consciousness through this random guru-ness of the universe can add up all the different sequences in the chain of events which brought us to Krishna? But finally, Krishna says, finally, you have to find a person with these qualities. And he describes, in the Uddhava Gita, he gives a list of 28 qualities of a sadhu, in which all the lessons can be learned. And when you're ready for that person does actually appear. Either that person directly, or the messenger of that person, or the messenger of that messenger. And we've all experienced that. And that's why the Navyogendras say, Tasmad Gurum Prapadyeta. When you've understood that everything in this world is suffering, Jigyasu Shreya Uttamam. Go for something that is ultimate. So, in this sense, everyone who has seen Vaikuntha, and I'm talking about anyone who's ever had a wonderful day on book distribution, everyone who's ever really, really become transported during a kirtan, everyone who's really glimpsed something during a class, anyone who's ever had an experience which is not occasioned by one of these instruments, but you've glimpsed something above and beyond yourself, you then become not only charged with the responsibility of continuing on that path yourself, but of taking other people with you. You become guru. The Vedas describe a guru as someone who repeats one sentence of the Vedas to another human being. That means that every single member of the Krishna consciousness movement is guru. In 1975, right here, right over there, Prabhupada concluded a class, and he said, he was talking about Acharya. He said, so now we are, I think he said, so now we are 5,000 or 10,000. He said, so soon we will become 100,000. And the devotees get excited at the idea of 100,000 devotees in the world. Okay? And they go, Jai Prabhupada. He said, then we will become 1,000,000. Jai Prabhupada. He said, then we will become 10,000,000. He said, 10,000,000 acharyas. He said, there will be no scarcity. You can look it up. Vanipedia 001, the first quote. 10,000,000 acharyas. So this means that those who have seen Vaikuntha in their life, those who have had that experience of Krishna in their life, they become duty-bound, not only to perfect their own existence and to become purified, but to bring others along with them. It is a grave responsibility. Our movement is that movement. It's a missionary movement. Missionary movements are to save souls. It is very easy, for instance, in the gentle art of book distribution, to conceive that there are something called book distributors in ISKCON, and then there are people who are non-book distributors. Okay? It's very simple. That is like Amish people with beards and Amish men who don't have beards. I'm sorry, but you will not, the concept of Amish and beard go along together. Like Muslim and beard. You've got to have one. It's part of the package. So being part of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, reading the books and distributing them is called upon everybody. There are no such species of life called book distributor into which category you do not fit. It's like if you're a Jehovah's Witness. You can't be a Jehovah's Witness that says, well, I believe in Jehovah, but you know, I'm not really much into this witnessing stuff. I don't want to go out with the books. Okay? The whole point is that everybody either buys them or buys them and gives them to others. I just thought I'd mention that. Preaching means to exhort. The English definition of the word preaching means to exhort. It's not just teaching, but it means to, by a passionate explanation, to bring people up to a higher level of understanding, higher level of participation. Prabhupada did that, of course. Prabhupada was not passive. One time he said, I was not passive. He said, if I was passive, I would not have come to America. He said, I had to be aggressive. It was because, what was her name? Lady book distributor, she had gone to Prabhupada and she'd asked, Prabhupada, how can I be quiet and shy in the temple, and yet when I get to the airport to distribute your books, I'm just talking to strange men all day long? Huh? Labangalati? So he said, no, you have to be aggressive. Doesn't mean violent, but aggressive means that you don't wait for people to come to you to buy a book. That's called a shopkeeper. A salesperson is different from a shopkeeper. A salesperson goes out. So this is, I mean, Prabhupada said, I'm practically whipping you to do this. I'm practically whipping you. Sell book, sell book, sell book. This was all the time when I was a boy. I spent 3 days in the temple. And they said, well, you've done 3 days in the temple now. Would you like to go traveling? And I was traveling for 6 years. I just thought that's what you do. That's what you do. You live in an ice-cold box and you travel around the country. Prabhupada said that, you boys and girls, you're traveling around England. He said, you're living like yogis in the Himalayas. You are, it's so cold. He said, but you're thinking, what is this thing on my skin? Okay. So he pushed everybody, but he also thanked everybody. And this is sometimes the element that may be missing. There are sort of, not two Prabhupadas, but two halves, if you like. One is the person that was constantly pushing us to take part in the Sankirtan movement, but the other person was the person who was constantly thanking his devotees for doing it. That happened in my life in 1975, in January. Prabhupada came to Bhaktivedanta Manor, and they asked Prabhupada, could he give a Sankirtan class to the Sankirtan devotees? So at the time there was 15, 20 devotees, and we went into Prabhupada's room, and he gave us a Sankirtan class about the importance of book distribution. But at one point he just looked at us, he looked at everybody in the eye, and he said, "Thank you for helping me push on this movement. Thank you for helping me." And I remember it just clear as day how I felt. It's just, here is Prabhupada, who I owe my life to. I owe everything to him, everything that Prabhupada has given me. And he is thanking me for helping him push on the movement. So I think that's a very important element. If you're going to extend yourself as a preacher in the Sankirtan mission, make sure that at the end of the day, or the week, or the month, there's someone saying, "Thank you. Thank you very much for doing what you've done." Sometimes we're very eager to push each other to do the right thing, but not so eager to thank each other. So I won't be over presumptuous, but may I thank at least those younger devotees on behalf of Prabhupada. Thank you for helping Srila Prabhupada push on this Krishna consciousness movement. Hare Krishna. That's not the end. I like the applause, but it's not the end. Prabhupada said, Krishna is not a poor man, and a rich man will always pay good wages to his advertising executive. So if you advertise Krishna, you'll always... You see, what we're talking about is Jayan Vijay had it sort of arranged. It was pre-planned. It was a pre-booked taxi back to Vaikuntha. It was all arranged. They knew where they were going. The Lord had made that arrangement for them. We were not so sure. What is my destiny? It's hanging on our faith. And some days we're very convinced, and some days we may not be so convinced. But Prabhupada told Mother Yamuna, he said, "I said that if you chanted these 16 rounds and followed four regulator principles, you would go back to Godhead at the end of your life. I would not lie to you. I would not lie to you." The Prabhupada would not lie to us. This is the formula. But we want to bring in as many people in that formula, because it's a remarkably or relatively easy formula to do. In England, we have a slightly different legacy. Prabhupada wrote to us, or wrote to the devotees who were my seniors, in 1973, and he said that he said, "You stay for some time in some place, you do Harinam Sankirtan, distribute books, give free information, give some prasadam, answer their questions, I'll come back to that in a second, answer their questions, and arrange for a program in a school, a hall, or a home like that. In this way, be free from anxiety, travel everywhere, and give Krishna consciousness to others." And it's interesting that to some people, the idea of speaking to someone about Krishna is something that is far too involved. But the function of a guru, the function of an acharya, and certainly one of being one of 10 million, Prabhupada predicted that this place would be filled with all of you coming from different parts of the world. Bhaktivinoda Thakur predicted that all of you would come and sing and chant together. Prabhupada called you 10 million acharyas. We haven't quite reached the 10 million mark. But acharya means achinoti hi shastrartam. He teaches, he practices, he knows. And to be an acharya, the followers who are taught by him also teach others. So to make Prabhupada the founder acharya, we also have to teach others and bring them along, and then you have to bring them along. The power of the acharya is that many generations from his earthly appearance, people are still following his teachings, and that means to actively, dynamically engage them. So Prabhupada talked about those six steps. To us in England, he did not say, "What will your 3 minutes do?" That's a very famous quote. We've made that famous, haven't we? The book distribution has made that famous. Sell books, what will your 3 minutes do? But to the devotees in England, he said, no, stop for some time, give something free, give some prasadam, answer their questions. It takes at least 3 minutes to do that. If we do that, Sankirtan will transform all over the world, people will make friends. Another aspect is if you make a pledge just to bring 10 people back to Vaikuntha with you, 10 people back to Godhead. Don't leave it all as a burden for those people who are ISKCON gurus. It is an impossible burden for any one single person to do. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he was one person. He had his 18 sannyasis. They had Maha Upadeshikas underneath them. Every Maha Upadeshika was looking after an Upadeshika. Every Upadeshika was looking after 10 disciples. It was a pyramid system. It didn't run for too long before his passing away. If ISKCON runs like that, then everybody is looking after someone. Because we want to be known not just as a preaching movement, but also as a caring movement. A movement that speaks to people and is friendly. Because that's what Prabhupada did. Prabhupada gave in his Srimad Bhagavatam classes, but also his morning walks, also his room conversations, and his one-to-one conversations. There are 4 different components of Prabhupada's ministry to others. We have to also, as well as giving classes, give that other 3 components to others. Prabhupada talked about how kind Krishna is. It didn't mean a great deal of sense to me until you actually experience Krishna's kindness in some very incontrovertible way. In 1977, Prabhupada had just translated this book, the 7th canto. I was here in March 1977 for the Gopranim festival. Prabhupada was giving classes every day until he stopped due to ill health. And he was talking about Prahlad and he was talking about Lord Nrsingadev. And one day, because I'd had enough of sitting at the back, it was usually, you know, there was, it, Mayapur is always the place where, you know, queuing goes out the window. You always have to be slightly aggressive to get to the front, whether it's Charanamrita, Prasadam, Kirtan leading, Bhagavatam, whatever it is. You have to be a little determined. You have to have the Utsahan and the Dridavrata to get to the front. So one day I managed to have that. So sitting right up close to Prabhupada, he held his hand up like this. And he was making this gesture with his right hand, like this. He said, so Lord Nrsingadev, he said, his palms, he was doing this, his palms are very soft, like lotus. He said, but his nails are very hard, like a chisel. He said, this is Adbhuta, this is wonderful. So these 2 things are there. On the one hand, the chisel for attacking, and destroying, and vanquishing, and finishing off completely. You cannot get any more finished. Okay? But on the one hand, the caring and the soft, delicate. And actual, there was one Sri Vaishnava Acharya, he says rather playfully, he says that the pillar that Lord Nrsingadev came out of, it wasn't just any pillar. He said it was Hiranyakashipu's Vijay Stambha. His Vijay Stambha, it was his victory pillar, into which had been carved all the heads of the demigods that he defeated. That was his favorite piece of architecture in the whole hall. And it was that that the Lord came out of. And he said, when he came out, Lord Nrsingadev, he said, no one has the ability to have 2 different emotions in their 2 eyes, except the Lord himself. On the one hand, he was looking at Prahlad with great affection, with a sigh, and on the other eye, he was looking at Hiranyakashipu with great anger. So 2 eyes, 2 distinct emotions. He said, only the Lord can have that. And finally, he says, when when Hiranyakashipu is on the lap of the Lord, Lord Nrsingadev takes his right hand, about to disembowel him, and he touches his chest just to feel whether there is any good there. Just to see whether there is any. But of course, Jai and Vijay, they're perfecting their relationship of enmity with the Lord. There's nothing there, not a scrap. So in a split second, and that was the end. The Lord comes for Prahlad Maharaj in his moment of need. He came for Draupadi in her moment of need, in just the time that she needed, in just the way that she needed, to confirm for her his presence in her life. He came for Gajendra at just the moment of surrender. Just the moment of surrender. That's why this phrase of Sharanagati is so much praised by the Vaishnava Acharyas. He came for Dhruva, and he also came for you. He came for you in your different situations. There was a time in your life when you really needed the Lord's presence. You didn't even know. I had a friend who was a Buddhist. He'd been engaged in Buddhist meditation for 18 months. He went all the way to Japan, so that just to make sure, he was very serious, and he was in Japan, and it wasn't working for him. Just wasn't working. And he came back to England, and one night, he looked at the stars, and he got down on his knees, and he said, "Dear God," he said, "you know I don't believe in you. You know I don't believe in you, but if you are there," imagine that prayer. I'm speaking to someone I don't believe in, but if you are there, please give me a sign. Just give me a sign. Tell me something that there is a connection. And the next day, he met three Buddhist monks on the street who, for some strange reason, took him to the Radhakrishna temple. And of course, they weren't Buddhist monks. They weren't Buddhist monks. Look, this way of life is for everybody. It's not just for an exclusive few. A lady from Dublin, Ireland, which is, if you're an Australian, it's like New Zealand, only shorter away. She rang up the Hare Krishna temple and she said, "I'd like you to. I heard you do funerals. You're the priest there." I said, "Yes, you do funerals." I said, "Well, sometimes." She said, "Well, I'm a Catholic, but I'd like you to come and do my sister's funeral." And I said, "Are you sure you've got the right place? This is the Hare Krishna temple. I don't do Catholic funerals." She said, "No, I want you to do it, and there's a reason." I said, "Okay." So in the chapel, the crematorium, there was 80 people, all dressed in black. One man, me, dressed in white. All Catholics. They'd all come from Dublin that morning. And I looked out, and as I do when I'm faced with a big group of people, I wonder, what the heck am I going to say? So I said, "What am I going to say? Shall I tell a story from Shastra, or what am I going to say?" So the body of the sister was lying there, as you do. And I said, I thought I'd told an English story, an old English story about the Vikings. You know the Vikings? You know, the horns on their head like this, and like this. So they came to attack England in 900. Anyway, so there's a story about a Viking king, and he asks his minister, he says, "Can you please tell me what lies after death?" The minister was thinking for a moment, and at that moment, in a room full of Viking warriors, all drinking and backslapping, and there was a little bird that came in the far window, and it just... and it flew, and it flew through the room, and it flew out the far window, and the minister turned to the king, and he said, "Did you see that?" He said, "Yes." He said, "That's your answer. That's life." He said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, the bird is the self. Okay? And all of this is life. And this is death. That is birth, that is death." He said, "Oh, that is remarkable." He said, "So the bird flies through life but remains the same, yes. Any more?" He said, "Yes, well, when the bird flies out that window into the night sky, does it stop existing?" He said, "No, of course not." He said, "Before the bird came in this window, Was it existing? He said, of course. He said, so? In the same way, you fly into this body, you remain for some years, and you fly off again. He said, thank you. So I told that story, and then I went on to do some other prayers and Ishapanishad shlokas and various things. And the lady came up to me afterwards. She was about 76, and she had 15 of her black-dressed relatives from Dublin with her, none of whom were smiling. And I thought, oh dear, I've really done it this time. And she said, you know that story you told, to those of you who don't speak Irish, you know that story you told. And I said, yes. She said, that was true. I said, what do you mean that was true? She said, that was true. She said, you're speaking the truth. I said, how do you know? She said, because that happened to me. I said, what, you're a Viking? She said, no. She said, I was in the hospital having an operation and my heart stopped. And I, just like a bird, flew out of my body. And she just went like this. She said, I went whoop, like that. And the doctor came in and was trying to get my heart started. And he was swearing and he was cursing and he couldn't get the heart started. She said, and I had to listen to his foul mouth. Older lady, Catholic, good Catholic lady. She said, anyway, so then they got my heart started and I went like that. And this was while the dead body of her sister was just lying here. And she said, afterwards I said to the doctor, you know when you had difficulty during the operation, she said, you shouldn't have sworn so much. Very bad for a doctor. And he said, no, no, no. He said, I can assure you, I'm a professional. I'm a professional. In England, when you say I'm a professional, it means trust me. I'm a professional. I would never do that. She said, no. She said, you did. He said, well, how do you know? You were fully under anesthetic. She says, oh, no, I wasn't. I was on the top of the ceiling listening to you. So she had had an experience whereby she left her body. And it's very interesting that many people are now coming to me in England and their children have started telling them stories of their previous life. Now, in the past, mummy and daddy would simply say, you'd never had another mummy, you never had another daddy. It's just us. But now they're thinking maybe there's a possibility. Because 40 years later, 40 years of book distribution and so many, we have stimulated the environment. And so people are coming and they say, my son says that he's lived before. Can you help us? One lady the other day, she came to me and she said, I just had a vision of my past life. And it was so shocking. I knew that this was the only place, the Hare Krishna temple was the only place I could come to talk about it. And so people are suffering, they're curious, and the world is a different place than it was 50 years ago. There is a basic philosophical foundation that book distribution and the preaching of this movement has created. Maybe only wisps of an idea. But I tell you this, these wisps of an idea are like memes. They're like little ideas, and they're populating the intellectual discourse of people, and people are, they're wanting to know, what do you people believe? And when they come to us, they're expecting two things, not only information, but also friendship. And this movement, practically speaking, is their only hope in an ocean of false gurus and false swamis and false hopes. This is the one movement that can actually help them. And I really feel that in the case of Jai and Vijay, their deliverance was assured. And in order to help someone, we have to take them by the hand and help them as a father or mother would help a child. In a dangerous situation, you don't let go of your child. Or in sports. In England, we have a game called cricket. Anybody here in India know the game cricket? Okay, it's an unusual game. I'm finishing now. We don't play it very well. But in cricket, to make the team, If the ball comes over, you have to catch the ball. If you don't catch the ball once, twice, three times, you get the name Butterfingers. That your fingers are made of butter and you couldn't catch the ball. And you don't make the team. So in this team, in this ISKCON team, we cannot be Butterfingers. We have to catch those souls when they come to us and hold on. Catch them and hold on. Plant the seeds, grow, and offer the fruits. It's very important. Otherwise, we are spending more man hours in meeting the public than any other organization on the surface of this planet. If you look at the number of man hours spent by ISKCON touching the hearts and the lives of people day after day after day, we need to be able to transfer that huge amount of human energy into people who have been saved and who have been gradually delivered. So please fix your mind on the spiritual home of everyone, that home which is your home. Become very determined to go there in this very lifetime. And take people with you. Take them with you. Every one of you. Be Acharya and take 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 with you. Why not? They have no one else except you. No one else is going to do it. But you do it. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Granthiraj, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Very important piece of philosophical information. A mobile has disappeared. If someone's picked it up and switched it off, could you bring it to the security outside the Panchatattva temple? The owner is waiting for it. Please unite that lost phone with its owner. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.